Well, thank you, Lisa, for that excellent introduction. As Lisa said, my name is Justin Pramar. I'm with The Ohio State University and also the operations manager for the SEIA Grid Knowledge Center. So I think what I'd like to do, especially considering there have been some excellent questions so far, and considering that usually at the presentations we give about SEIA Grid, there are people that really want to ask more questions and simply want to hear a lot of things. I have a whole bunch of slides that I could go over. I think what I'd like to do, though, if it's okay, is just go briefly through this table of contents here and then see if people are interested in the specific topics. If you could actually just let me know, maybe raise your hand or something, that would be excellent. Essentially, SEIA Grid, in terms of the technical details, is mostly useful, of course, for software developers, software engineers, people who are actually using SEIA Grid to build informatics solutions. So I don't want to talk a lot about the technical details if, for example, that's really not of interest to everybody in this room. So the first general topic is just what is a SEIA Big Knowledge Center? I really do need to go over that just so I set the context. But SEIA Grid Knowledge Center is just really one of the SEIA Big Knowledge Centers. And so really the first thing that I'd want to make sure I convey is that there are six SEIA Big Knowledge Centers currently, and they're really all focused around specific applications or technologies that are a part of the larger SEIA Big program. And of course, SEIA Grid is one of those technologies. So a little bit about SEIA Big. How many people here really know about SEIA Big and it wouldn't, especially as compared to, let's say, the FinGrid efforts? Is that something that might be of interest to people if I compare and contrast a little bit? Okay. Second, how many people know what SEIA Grid does or how it does it? Or probably good to talk about that a little bit. Okay. And then, of course, the SEIA Grid Knowledge Center, I'll go over, I think, fairly briefly, but the really key point here is that we are, of course, based at The Ohio State University. We work with a couple other institutions, but essentially, because we know quite a bit about SEIA Grid, because we've been involved in the lead development of the SEIA Grid infrastructure, we help other institutions essentially adopt SEIA Grid as part of their informatics solutions. So is that topic in general, would most people be looking to figure out if Grid is just a bunch of smoke and mirrors or if it's actually something you'd want to use one day? Okay, great, I'll focus on that then. And then finally, some community feedback, which I'll probably just note some of the things we're looking at. So, all right, thank you for nodding and whatnot, that helps. So very briefly, the SEIA Big Knowledge Centers is really part of a fairly new initiative, let's say. It's about 15 months old, this initiative called the Enterprise Support Network. Okay, so that is a large umbrella of, let's say, services and entities, one group of which is the SEIA Big Knowledge Centers. Okay, there's another group called the Support Service Providers, which I won't really talk too much today about, except to tell you how they differentiate. Knowledge centers are funded by the NCI essentially as a resource for anybody who has any questions whatsoever about grid technologies, about SEIA Grid specifically, or of course about other specific application domains. I mean, you'll see them on the right here, but molecular analysis tools, things like microarray data storage and sharing, tissue collection and tissue sample data, with of course the tissue biospecimen banking and technology tools knowledge center. So there's a variety of ones, but SEIA Grid from our point of view is really more of a cross-cutting knowledge center, and that what we're trying to do is just tie everything together and make it so we can easily share data and perform analysis on this data. And so across all knowledge centers, really the domain expertise, community outreach. We do have a website essentially to get source code, ask questions, read documentation, all of that. Okay. So I'll briefly say the SEIA Grid Knowledge Center specifically, OSU is the lead site for the SEIA Grid Knowledge Center, but we work very closely with the University of Chicago Argonne National Lab. You may know them for developing Globus. I'll just briefly say that SEIA Grid is essentially based on Globus. So in terms of the work that Finn is doing, specifically the NICFI and other centers of excellence with PH Grid here, all of this is interoperable because we're actually all using Globus under the hood. So that's a really important point. I want to make sure that, you know, everybody understands CEABIG is not separate and, let's say, not interoperable with the PH Grid efforts here. We are completely interoperable. Okay. And then also Emory University, who is very much has a lot of expertise in developing CEABIG applications as well as applications outside of CEABIG but that use CEAGrid. So what we try to do in the Knowledge Center is really three things. First is really information resources, which is very straightforward. And I'll go over a little bit of the information resources we provide. The second really is, I think, one of our most important primary aims, which is really collaboration with anybody who has any questions from the first question, which is what is a grid, to detailed questions about trying to actually integrate CEAGrid with, say, their existing information systems. And then third, of course, this kind of active dynamic community. So we hope, I mean, I hope in particular that you walk away here today knowing that CEAGrid is not something that's only for CEAABIG community. It's not at all something that is only for the cancer domain. It actually is applicable across all, you know, health IT systems. And I'm not really exaggerating. When I get a little bit more into how CEAGrid is kind of put together, hopefully you'll see that. But it is definitely applicable to public health. We actually work very closely with the cardiovascular research community, some other communities actually that just are separate from cancer. So CEAABIG, I'll talk a little bit about CEAABIG in particular so that you understand essentially the motivating use cases and scenarios that really got us to CEAGrid and to where we are right now. And Mark just walked in, so he can answer more questions if you have high-level questions about CEAABIG. But essentially, the CEAABIG as a program has a number of, let's say, primary aims or initiatives. The first is this distributed infrastructure. So what that really means is there are lots of cancer centers around the country. There's other, of course, educational institutions, other private companies. There's a lot of people involved in essentially curing cancer. And so when you connect these information systems together, you have to, of course, first realize that it's not only around the U.S., but actually also around the world. For example, we partner very closely with UK's NCRI program. That's national. What is NCRI? Cancer Research Institute. There you go. And so we work very closely with them on using essentially the same set of technologies, but of course specializing it for separate, not separate, but slightly different use cases and scenarios. So as you connect these information systems together, you immediately run into some problems. And these are problems that basically are kind of computer problems, but they show up as problems of actually working together. As Joe said, something where if you're actually trying to track H1N1, you want these really information systems today, not in 2 years, right? So a lot of interoperability issues motivated us to actually take a look into building what is essentially an interoperability platform, and that really is CEAGrid. So I'll talk a little bit more about interoperability in a minute, but the end result, which of course is the goal of what we're trying to do here, is once you share data, once you're able to easily grab data from collaborating institutions, run analyses on it, at that point, you're really realizing the vision that CEAABIG has. And I think that vision is not very different from what other communities have, whether it's the public health community, cardiovascular research community, et cetera. I think a lot of the health, entire health domain really is on, I think, the same path. So CEAAGrid is at least one option for that. So as I said before, a little bit more detail, legacy, quote unquote, information systems, which really means stovepipes. It just means they're not connected. Okay, everybody kind of does their own thing. In particular, say common data formats, absence of tools to connect different databases. These are more kind of technical aspects, but they're problems that we're trying to solve with CEAAGrid. And an aspect of this, I should say, a very important aspect, is really the common vocabularies, or what we call essentially the semantics. So if you have two databases you need to connect and you need to know if one value in a database over here actually could be compared to a value in another database at another site, semantics is the way you actually try to answer those questions. You try to define the meaning of the data that's actually being shared. So CEAGrid, and I hate to be confusing, but people do use it in different contexts, kind of interchangeably. I guess you'd say it's SiaGrid itself means different things to different people. But first and foremost, from my point of view at least, at OSU, really is a software infrastructure. So SiaGrid, what you do with it is you download it. You put it on your computer. It's a piece of software. Okay. Past that, some of this software is only good, of course, if you actually use it to do something. So Grid, essentially being a collection of just services that are out there, are deployed and made available to others. Some of these services may be data services that share data. Some of these services may be analytical services that actually analyze that data, maybe produce more data to store elsewhere. But we generally separate into two categories of services. But the SiaGrid distribution, the SiaGrid software itself, what you essentially do with it, at least in part, one of the things you do with it is you actually deploy some of the included services to facilitate the grid applications. And I'll just give you an example. Let's say you have a bunch of grid services at collaborating institutions. The first thing you want to do is just find out what's out there. I mean, it's literally what you do with, say, a White Pages or a Yellow Pages phone book to find your favorite restaurant or something. You want to find, for example, who has microarray data available on the grid, who's sharing it now, do I have access to it? We have a service that I'll just call a directory service. Technically, it's called the index service, if you've heard that term, but it's a directory service that we actually include in SiaGrid. You stand this up, means it's running on a computer somewhere, and then whenever you deploy other grid services, they actually tell the index service, hey, I'm here. And so then you can go to the index service to say, what data is available, what services are up and running. Okay, so that's an example of a service that's distributed with SiaGrid. And the reason we do that, of course, is because there's no way you want every site to be building their own service directory. That doesn't make any sense. You really want one for the grid, and you just want it ready for you. So we build it and give it to you. Third, really a community of developers, and I think that's a little too restrictive, to be honest. I don't think it's really a community of developers. I'd say SiaGrid is a whole community of informatics specialists, software developers, project managers, program managers. It's a bunch of people that are, of course, all trying to share and analyze data. Okay. And I will mention there is a SiaGrid community website, and I'll tell you more about the SiaGrid Knowledge Center website specifically, but there's a variety of avenues, essentially, to interact and kind of join the SiaGrid community. So why I like this slide is saying that it's analogous to the power grid. So this is an oversimplification, and if it's too simple for people, sorry, I apologize. I'm just trying to be very clear. If you have a power grid, of course, you have various power stations that, of course, transmit power, to wherever. The grid is really the same thing. I mean, you can think of it as analogous to a power grid, but instead of transmitting power, we're obviously transmitting data and we're running analyses, okay? But the services on the grid really are analogous to power stations that are available around the city to, power buildings, okay? So what we do is, you can think of it, if you put on a map, is you'd have sites around the country and around the world that run their grid services and they're connected by the grid. So some of the infrastructure areas, and I'm probably not going to go very technical because it doesn't seem like there are too many people that want technical details. Of course, we have questions after. But what I will say is you only really want to contact the SiaGrid Knowledge Center, of course, if you're interested in SiaGrid. So I want to tell you a little bit about what SiaGrid provides. And of course, if you have questions about other things that I don't mention, things that maybe we don't provide, that's where the SiaGrid Knowledge Center in particular can help. I mean, we can work with you to actually maybe build these services that you actually need. And so, for example, we work very closely with RODS, with some of the other CDC groups that are investigating grid technologies. I mean, they're some of our very valued collaborators. So first of all is this metadata infrastructure. And I'll simply say this describes the meaning of data. So if you literally go to a service on the grid and you query and you pull back results, the metadata is going to tell you what is the meaning of this data. In particular, for example, what are the units of a measurement, or what is the definition of some concept. Security, which of course is really vital, that really is about making sure that only people who you want to share your data with can actually access your data. Okay, and I just want to point out that I worded it a very specific way. It is not true, and this is a common misconception, that if you decide to share your data, it's like putting it on Facebook or Google or something, and it caches it forever, and oh boy, I mean, you've released it into the wild, good luck after that, okay? That's actually the need for the grid, at least one of the major needs. Obviously, in most communities, for example, in cancer, we worry a lot about, of course, PHI. I can see in the public health community, of course, entire governments worrying about other people knowing that they have a really bad H1N1 outbreak, right? So you need security just throughout the system to make sure that access to your data is very controlled. And of course, we spend a lot of time and a lot of effort making sure that everything is 100% secure. And Steve Langello is actually in the room, so if you have lots of detailed questions about security, he can help answer them. But suffice to say that, yes, we know that's a huge concern. Yes, we address that concern 110%. Okay. Past that, we provide really some things that make CA Grid as a software package easy and accessible, or as easy as possible and as accessible as possible for other developers like, let's say, the RODS Laboratory. Their developers to actually use and integrate into their scenarios and use cases. So a lot of service developer tooling. We have various services to make it easy to kind of string together workflows, which is simply I grab service data from one service and then I feed it to an analytical service for some analysis, and then I store that data out, you know, those analysis results on a third service. It's that kind of thing. But we provide services to make it really easy to use. And so on this slide, what I really want to point out is these are all parts of, let's say, the CA Grid production environment. So I mentioned CA Grid is one of these things that you actually deploy, and it's running on servers around the country or around the world. But the upper left box here, this community provided services, we provide essentially everything else on this page. We try to provide a lot of services to actually fit a lot of the common use cases. But the upper left box is really the most important. That's the services that people like the RODS Group are building. That's the service people like Minnesota Supercomputer Institute and University of Utah. I mean, there's just a lot of people that essentially build more application-level services to share specific types of data, microarray data, for example, and run specific analyses. How am I doing on time? Okay. So the real value of the grid comes from, of course, these community-provided services. Sharing actual data, performing research, also using it, of course, in clinical environments. And I'll actually get to that in a few slides. One thing that I do want to point out, and actually this was a good question during Joe's session, is really the question about kind of sustainability and longevity, okay? CA Grid has been built from the ground up to actually integrate other components in a fairly pluggable nature. All right. So what that really means is if you have a piece of software that you've been using at your institution for a long period of time, we certainly don't want to take the approach if we're going to come in and replace that. Okay. So an example is every institution really has a user login system. Okay. Let's say technically that's LDAP. What we actually have is a service that integrates LDAP so that you can log in the same as you've always logged in, whatever your username and password is, but now you can get onto the grid. Okay, so that's just one example of how CA Grid has been designed to make sure that it really fits into your environment. We're not trying to replace your systems. We're not trying to make you use it everywhere. We see it actually has a lot of value alongside other information systems. Okay, and so one thing I do want to point out too is CA Grid software. Don't let the name fool you. CA Grid is not only applicable to the cancer community, the same that it's not only applicable to, say, research. It's applicable to clinical environments, in particular translational research environments. Joe mentioned that, of course, quite heavily during his talk, and I'll give you a few examples, actually, in some later slides. So very briefly, the Knowledge Center, if you're interested in CA Grid, please come to us. Talk to us about anything. It is absolutely appropriate for program managers to contact us to figure out on a program level how you might be able to leverage CA Grid, or you might be able to interact with CA Big, all the way to software developers that are actually using CA Grid but running into bugs, running into problems, and of course need help with them. And the reason I say we can cover that wide range is we collaborate with a lot of people, in particular, of course, CA Big program management and others at we just have kind of a far-reaching view in that we can put the right people together to essentially address your questions. But you can definitely just come to us and start asking questions, and we'll get you answers. So in addition, there's a wiki. There's some forums, there's our code repository, these are all integrated in the CABIG Knowledge Center website. What can you actually find there? You can actually find technical guides for all CAGRID components, all the information, all the details you could possibly ever want to know about CAGRID. Do you have the count, Steve, actually? I mean, there's something like 120 maybe technical, what we call guides at this point, and that's only a portion of our information resources. Extensive tutorials. We spend a lot of time making sure that people can get up and running with CAGRID very quickly, very easily. And we're always looking to expand these tutorials. So if you're interested in getting started, we actually have a getting started page. The CABIG knowledge base, I'll differentiate just from the technical knowledge base, and that's really just for ease of understanding. The CABIG knowledge base is really focused very much on CABIG use cases, scenarios, and application development teams. So it's if you're essentially joining CABIG, the CABIG knowledge base has articles relevant to that effort. The technical knowledge base is just much more obviously technically focused, but really kind of domain agnostic information is what's found there. Community Training Grid, briefly, is a deployment of the core CAGRID services. And you may notice in the metadata services, this yellow box in the upper right, the leftmost of those three computers, those icons there, says index service. That is the directory, white pages, yellow pages service I mentioned earlier. That's an example of one service that you'll find up and running in the training grid. And it really is a core component of all grids. So the CABIG production grid has an index service. Other grids that our collaborators run that are based on CAGRID also have that, et cetera. But these are services you'll commonly find running and accessible that really are the start, let's say, of a new grid. I'll highlight the community projects effort to say that what we try to do for sure is as people develop really good technology that essentially extends or enhances CAGRID, we try to facilitate dissemination and reuse of those technologies. And one example I'll give is technology that came out of the cardiovascular research grid effort in the CABIG in vivo imaging project, which is the imaging workspace. They really produced some good work with this XML data services. So all that means is if you have XML documents and XML data, such as, let's say, HL7 data, we usually used it in CVRG for HL7 annotated ECG data, you can just stand up this service, it's ready to go, it shares your XML information. So the community projects effort is focused on making sure those solutions are available for others. It's not just, you know, done once and then nobody knows about it anymore. So I'll skip some of the benefits and resources, but suffice it to say we provide everything you need to actually share your CAGRID extensions and enhancements with others. So I'll briefly go over collaborations. Here is a partial list, actually, of our collaborators. I'll go into detail on a few of them, but there are lots of other people that this list is actually fairly old that we've since started working with. So we would love to work with you in the future. So if anybody here wants to contact us, please do. But just to give you an example of some of the work that we're doing, CTSA, if you're not familiar with it, is of course another national program focused, of course, on translational science. The OSU CTSA site actually is building this infrastructure. It's called Triad. It essentially it builds on CAGRID, customizes a few services, adds a few services. But there are a number of collaborating sites, and Ohio State University is the lead development site for Triad, but these sites have actually agreed, essentially have a memorandum of understanding to actually use Triad at their own institution, their own CTSAs, okay? And so the reason that I highlight that really goes back to the previous slide, this last bullet here. CTSA really has more of a grassroots / bottom-up approach. There's not really any hard requirements for actually using CAGRID, which semantic repositories you use, et cetera. And so the CABIG program, of course, has found great value in making sure that people have semantically annotated models and that they are basically able to easily collaborate together at the semantic level. And so the CTSA has found value in using CAGRID for their own sites. Okay, so a very different environment, more of a bottom-up approach in CTSA, has also, of course, found use with CAGRID. So we're very excited about that work. The cardiovascular research grid I mentioned earlier, but the point here is it's not cancer domain. And NCRI, I mentioned earlier as well. The UK has, of course, extended SiaGrid and done some very good work with it, in particular in kind of high-level queries. Won't get into too much about that, but if there's questions, please let me know. And so where are we looking to the future? I mean, what are we kind of tackling? One focus area is really semantic interoperability. So there are a number of things that make, for example, CTSA different from, let's say, the SiaBig program. Some of the extensions that have been done for Triad as part of the CTSA effort have been to make sure that each institution can kind of use their own semantic repositories, their existing infrastructure, and then later integrate it into, let's say, a common semantic repository for their sites to jointly use. But what they want to do basically is get each site up and running, and then later, as it makes sense, collaborate, work on data sharing, et cetera. So that's something that we're taking a close look at, both within the SiaBig program, as well as, of course, working with other communities to identify those needs. Upgraded core infrastructure. There's not a whole lot of details at this point, but essentially there is a whole new SiaGrid version 2 that's in the works for some time in 2010, and probably late 2010, but I don't want to make too many promises. But a whole technology refresh, essentially, combined with new services that essentially provide solutions for some of our identified use cases, et cetera, that we're not currently meeting, will be part of the SiaGrid 2 development cycle. And so we're very early in that cycle, but the reason I mention this is because if you are looking at SiaGrid but find something there that's missing, that you desperately need, we not only can work with you to actually get those features implemented, we'd love to. So an example, and I'll just throw one out here, the public health community is, of course, very kind of, some of the use cases at least, of course, are very alert-based. So at the OSU Medical Center, we have some cases of, let's say, SARS or some cases of H1N1, right? This alert goes out to the community. You really want to do the same thing, of course, on the grid. I mean, you really want to have services that as soon as somebody sees a doctor, they put information into hopefully their, you know, PDA or something, and then it's fed right into your system. You really want to immediately let people know that, look, H1N1 is actually kind of growing right in this, locality here. We want other people to be alerted. Okay, so that kind of alert mechanism is definitely a use case that public health community has that we don't currently address, at least in a very complete manner yet, in SiaGrid. So that's something that we're taking a look at for the future. New requirements, monitoring the grid, very important. Everybody needs to know if there are computer systems that are not working very well, and this includes grid systems. The second is this grid metrics collection. That's mostly about, well, who's sharing data on the grid? What data are they sharing? Kind of a, if you looked at an intersection, a traffic intersection for a number of hours, you'd get a great sense of if there's people going through this intersection or not. It's really the same thing, but for the grid. And then additional grid deployment scenarios. So this kind of gets a little more technical, but for IT departments, I'm sure everybody knows that it can be sometimes a nightmare to work with your IT department to actually get this stuff up and running. That alone can take something like 2-3 months to do, and that's usually because they're worried a lot about security impacts and other things. And so we're taking a look at that as well. So, okay, perfect. I'm right on time, actually. Thank you. So if you walk away from this with just a couple of things, it's one that SiaGrid is a informatics platform, I'll say, or at least a part of an informatics platform that really grew out of the SiaBig program use cases requirements. We very much want to be interoperable. I mean, there's, of course, now almost an explosion of grid initiatives. I mean, it was mentioned in talks throughout the past couple of days, but public health, of course, is just another one of the areas where people say, ooh, we're taking a look at grid. And, of course, the United States is only one of the countries that's saying that. So, essentially, we all have a good reason to work together and make sure that, at the very least, you can share data between, these grid platforms. I see Ravi in the back with University of Chicago Argonne, but I mean, there's a lot of people that are, of course, working towards the same goal. And so we certainly, hope to be a part of that and certainly want to, work with you to actually figure out how SiaGrid can fit in to the picture and what can it provide. And so the Knowledge Center, that's what we do. And please come, please contact us. I mentioned here, everyone is welcome to contact us, and that means now if you have questions or in 5 minutes, I mean, whenever. We are immediately accessible to everybody. You do not have to have a formal relationship with CABIG. You don't have to have signed any contracts. You don't have to give us money. All you do is email us. It's really that easy. I promise. Forums are good for specific topics. Email exchanges, in particular, of course, teleconferences, video conferences, maybe even on-site collaborations are, of course, the way to go when we have something bigger to address. And we do that regularly. In addition, we also provide, I didn't mention it too much, but we absolutely do provide training. Sometimes we provide very custom tailored training to help you get up to speed with specific kind of near-term objectives. Okay, so if you like the idea of CAGRID and then you think, oh boy, I really don't want, you know, my team fooling around for 6 months trying to figure out how to use this stuff, we can also solve that problem for you. And then here's our contact us page, and I'll probably go back to the beginning where I think we have a good slide set. Excuse me, a good link specifically for the CAGRID Knowledge Center. So if you write down one URL, I'd appreciate it if you write down the one that's actually there. Thank you. Should I
have a question? Oh, yeah. Okay. For Justin?
Yes. That's still in the works. What I will assure you is that if you get started with CAGRID today, we will definitely work to upgrade you to anything. Okay, so I'll break down the question in kind of two ways. One, in terms of backwards compatibility, in that if you have CAGRID, let's say a 1.x, which is what we're on now, and then there's a CAGRID 2.0 in the future, which is what it's going to be called, the version number at least will be 2.0, are these systems directly going to be able to talk to each other? Okay, that is a little bit TBD. But the really important question for you probably is, if you start now, if you download CAGRID 1.3, which is our latest release right now, are you going to be just, you know, having to do all of this over again in a year? Absolutely not. We will definitely work to upgrade. We always provide upgrade paths. And if there are any kind of specific technical requirements or issues that come with upgrading, again, Knowledge Center is a resource to help you with that. And one thing I should point out too, I think I did emphasize enough how accessible the CAGRID Knowledge Center is. I do also want to point out how accessible the CABIG program is as well. Okay, so we are the CAGRID effort, let's say, at least in part, for the CABIG program is aligned with what we call the architecture workspace. Okay, so we've heard, of course, about enterprise architecture. Monday night they had the community of practice meeting. And if you've heard of the EACOP, was what they call it really, in other sessions, we have a similar kind of structure, let's say, in CABIG. So I'll give you a real use case that just happened a few weeks ago. We worked with Minnesota Supercomputing Institute, who has used CAGRID as part of their informatics solution to share data, specifically with Mayo Clinic. Okay, they came to us and asked a couple of good questions, which we didn't really have the answers to because the questions haven't been asked before. We invited them to join our Architecture Workspace teleconference, where I would pose this question to other, of course, experts who really can each have pieces of the answer or pieces of the solution. Since then, I'm actually working with those teams to essentially generate a solution, generate recommendations, et cetera, and then make sure that the Minnesota Supercomputing Institute actually has their answer and can move forward. Okay, so if you, I mean, that's an example of how we work with others to make sure that Seagrid's working for you, but if you have use cases, scenarios that really aren't addressed, CIBIG program itself is just extremely accessible. To join the teleconference, you don't have to receive any invite or anything. I probably, if the CIGRA Knowledge Center, if you communicate with me, I'll send you the information. I'll invite you right to the teleconference. So it's very low barrier to entry. It's very accessible. Yes?
First, I want to thank you.
Thank you.
But I see the grid as a really neat environment for researchers. And say I'm a
right.
What do you see as an ultimate solution?
Right. So, in case you didn't hear it, do you have a follow-on? Or okay, yes, yeah, I'll repeat it. Right. So, in case you didn't hear, Joe asked an excellent question, which really relates to kind of longevity/continuity. Okay. So, what Joe said specifically is, if I am a researcher that is, for example, grabbing data from a microarray service that's out there on the grid, okay. Clearly, there is an institution that is providing this data and stands up this service, literally paying for the electricity for the server that's running the service, et cetera. Okay, let's say it goes away. How do you handle that problem? What are the aspects? I mean, it's an excellent question, of course. Okay, and so I'll just tell you from my experience what happens and I think ways to maybe mitigate this problem. First of all, realize that the grid is a little bit different from the internet, I'll say, in how you use it. Okay, first of all, there's technical differences. We have security and other things, but I'll set those aside. What it really means, what you're doing with the grid, is you're collaborating with other people. Okay, most likely, if you're grabbing microarray data from some institution that's sharing it, they know that you're doing that. They probably give you access to that data. Okay. In particular, you have some kind of collaboration project, maybe even a whole program that's going on that actually is a collaborative effort, okay? So I'd say in the first thing I'd like to address is, in reality, in practice, that doesn't really happen, okay? In terms of just a service up and disappearing and that's it, okay? Now, I will say there are, of course, technical issues which we're all aware of. You know, websites go down all the time. I mean, even Google goes down and they're renowned for how, you know, reliable their systems are. Okay, so I'll set aside the, let's say, reliability question, if that's okay. Unless you have questions about that, I'm happy to answer the reliability question. But I think a better answer is, if a service does disappear on the grid, I think that's something that you really approach from a project/program level. Okay, I think you need to work this out in advance. If this is a critical service that you're using for your research, I think you want to do one of two things. One, you probably want multiple copies of the service running. Okay, which is really a redundancy/availability issue. But I think more importantly, in the CIBIG program, all the software that we develop actually is open source. Okay, so what that should mean is the service itself really is open source software that you can stand up and that is readily deployable. What I'm trying to say essentially is, if they have a microarray data service, and let's say they're even using the CIBIG microarray solution, CA Array, for example, that software you can install right at your institution, okay? Now, clearly what you don't have is the other institution's data. And they're not, I mean, we all know, they're not about to give you complete access to your data. But that's the thing that, of course, you are collaborating with them for, okay? So I think it's a combination of open source solutions can be reused, services can be kind of set up redundantly, plus you have a collaboration, so you would hope that your collaborators aren't simply disappearing overnight. I think that's reasonable. Did that answer your question? I see other people that probably want to jump in.
So you have a lot of options, but the point being, you know, the grid.
grid is a technology just as the internet that helps you facilitate and build communities for doing research, but it doesn't like necessarily provide all the policies and best practices built into the technology. You have to do that when you stand up your grid and organize your community. And if there's a strong community, you don't really have to worry about those things. If it's a weaker community, then you do. But it has really nothing to do with technology.
I just did want to reiterate what Steve said, in case you didn't hear it and you wanted to. It really comes down to having a strong community, as well as essentially from a program/project point of view, I mean, some kind of agreements in place, let's say, for continuity. Okay, so I think it really comes down to the specific collaboration. Okay, I will point out one other thing, which is, I mentioned there's this core set of grid services that are kind of the foundation of a grid. That's something that we do get questions about. People want to know, well, should I be running this at my own institution? It's kind of the same question of, well, if I'm using Google for everything, what happens if Google's a company goes bankrupt, right? I mean, people ask the same question. Well, I'm going to be honest, that can be a problem. but again, that really comes down to how you are collaborating with people, not really a technology issue, and Steve made that great point. Do you have a question or a comment? Because I know Ravi in the back has a comment. Okay. Do you want to add, Ravi?
Yeah.
Are there other, yes, next question, please.
Okay, one of the core services, on a different topic, one of the core services was vocabulary services.
Yep.
Now, that's actually LexBig, right?
LexBig is a model, the service that the CABIG program runs to actually store vocabularies is called just EVS, just Electronic Vocabulary System. And I'll make it a little more confusing by saying the grid service that actually talks to the CABIG EVS is just called LexEVS. Okay, so there's three things going on.
That's all a derivative of the stuff that came out of Mayo's LexBig project.
I believe so.
Yeah, okay. That was just kind of to confirm my understanding.
Sure.
So my real question is, what kind of relationship, and I'm talking about a technical relationship.
Okay. And I'm sorry.
FinVADS, which is a vocabulary distribution service that the CDC has set up and is made available to public health. And most public health departments are making more and more use of that now. And that's where they get their vocabulary sourced from. Now, it doesn't have all the other services.
Okay.
That the vocabulary service on the grid supplies.
Okay.
But it's because it's an access and distribution system. Translation, ontological map, and all that.
Sure.
What kind of stuff exists between those?
Okay.
Nothing, might be something.
Okay.
I just don't know. And is there any kind of plan going forward to kind of tie those together in some way?
Okay. So. All right, so I think what I'll do is just focus on kind of the technical answer for myself. Do you have more information, Mark, about FinVATS? I don't know. I mean, so let me just start by saying a technical thing. One of the slides that I showed earlier is that CAGRID, one of the excellent benefits of using CAGRID is to integrate your existing systems and basically make them accessible on the grid. Okay, so FinVATS, it sounds like, could be essentially, you could stand up a FinVATS grid service that talks to FinVATS, and that's how you get, let's say, the same vocabulary. You actually retrieve the vocabularies and other things through this grid service so that you can retrieve it on the grid, so to speak. Okay, so what we always have essentially is usually there's some existing IT system, let's say a database, could be an actual application. What you typically do to actually get that on the grid is you build a grid service, which is essentially a front end. And it just basically acts almost a little bit as a broker to actually kind of connect this service with the rest of the community, okay? Now, that's a very technical answer. Right. Right.
If they're not consistent,
right.
Now you've actually used grid technology to bring confusion to the market.
Okay, no. Okay.
So this is the problem.
Okay. Right.
So, I have some insight into this. So first let me say, you know, C-Grid is a set of components, right? And then there are production instances of it. And there are several of them. You know, one of them is CA Biggs, and they have their own, they're using WebCVS and WebGrid and for achieving semantic interoperability. The folks in the UK, Cancer Grid, have a different system, much like your own to here. And then the CTSAs actually have different systems from CTSA to CTSA. So all of these systems can play in the environment, but then you do run into the problem that they're suggesting if you want to achieve interoperability across these production instances in terms of semantics. That is a problem, and if you look, Justin had a slide that's actually something that we're working on. I mean, at this point you've had these somewhat disconnected yet connected communities in terms of health that have done things in different ways, and the good thing is that you have these little pockets of people coming together and sort of collaborating and trying to achieve semantic interoperability. But when you sort of mesh them together, they don't fit very well at the semantic level, as you suggested. So that is a challenge that we need to address, and it's only partially a technology challenge because, you know, we've gotten this far in terms of achieving interoperability amongst these different communities. This is more of one of those social challenges where we say, okay, now that we've gotten this far, you know, how do we put our heads together to sort of integrate all of us together? And, you know, that's a challenge.
It's a huge problem, yeah. Because if you've got EHRs and healthcare service delivery institutions that are now using the grid to populate their EHR and capture their clinical data, but there are statutes that require them to do surveillance reporting, and there are regulations that require them to use different services,
yeah.
You have a huge source of truth problem.
Yeah.
Or your basic infrastructure components of semantic
interoperability. Yeah.
And you know, from my point of view, I mean, all this technology is great, but I don't write programs anymore.
It's fine.
I'm tired of staying up late at night trying to get things to compile. So I'm much more concerned about technology that gives you all of these great tools, most
yeah.
of which that allow you to shoot yourself in the foot more efficiently.
Okay.
And this is why, to be honest with you, this is one of the reasons CA Big is investing resources into having a knowledge center to support other communities, and that CA Big sees the need to interoperate with other health organizations, you know, health communities, in order to facilitate just cancer research, you know, because there are missing pieces. So, you know, this is, in some sense, a grassroots effort to sort of bring other groups to the table and to start having these discussions. But, you know, by and large, it's a huge problem to address, and, you know, it's not going to be addressed with technology. This is a sort of...
And this argument with Dr. Shute.
Right, and there's a direct analog of the Knowledge Center on the grid that Chris is involved in at Mayo doing the vocabulary issues. So, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of discussion and work going on, admittedly some of it's technical, thinking about technical ways that, you know, you can use the infrastructure to simplify that problem. But I, you know, I think to the degree or the extent to which we can identify places, just as you did, where either there is an integration problem or you see a train wreck on the way, engaging Chris in an argument is a good way, frankly, to get it discussed and to start to raise it up. Because just like the Grid Knowledge Center is out there talking, not just to the cancer community, but to the broader community, so is the Vocabularies and Data Elements Knowledge Center over at Mayo doing the same thing. I think the intent can't be ultimately to have one ground source of truth in the grid system, but it can be to make sure that our interactions with the rest of the folks who are either seeing the likelihood of problems or are encountering problems is least are raising this fourth part.
You'd like to know that the trends are heading to each other before they actually fall.
Maybe you should have.
We have time for one more question.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just follow up with that with Ohio State University specifically actually has a collaboration with UCSF using OntoMapper. Okay, so if people have heard of I2B2, essentially OntoMapper is a way to kind of, it's part of the technical solution to bridge the gap from an I2B2 system to CA Grid, the grid. Okay, this is a work in progress, and we're actually working very closely, of course, with UCSF to actually get this up and running. So we're very excited about that. But I think that's an excellent point. It's a really good example of how some of these systems, which were developed completely independently, are being bridged.
So one of the answers is to have a very, very robust ontological user
One more question, I think, that you had?
No, I was just going to remark that it's definitely not a technology problem. The technology is exposed to the necessity of reconciling the different ontological.
Yeah, John here actually kind of just agreed that it probably is more of a policy, let's work together, collaboration issue than really a technology problem.